Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Fidelia. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, County, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Tallapoosa, Glen Rock, Black Rock, Little Rock, Oskaloosa, Tennessee, Chicopee, Spirit Lake, Grand Lake, Devil's Lake, Crater Lake, Beach Lake. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Yes, Mike, I've actually heard two renditions of that song this week by different artists, and I'm not going to mention it, because Johnny Cash has the best version by far. Well, thank you very much, Audrey, for getting us on the show tonight. We could never do it without you. Welcome to the Blog Talk Radio Network, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Jumbled Justice Radio Show, and I'm your host, Keith Haley. We do want to thank Johnny Cash for taking. We would never mention another artist that sings that song. Johnny is our man, but we want to thank him for taking us on that trip across 90 cities and states in the United States. And every once in a while, we play the whole song. It's fascinating, and as we've mentioned many, many weeks in a row, that Johnny Cash actually sings that song from memory. And you know people probably who can't remember 10 words, let alone several hundred different states in the proper order, and cities, etc. Emily and Mike, thanks for being in. Is there something buzzing around the office tonight? What is that sound? I don't know what it is. We'll have to see. The purpose of our show, ladies and gentlemen, if you're a first-time listener, we have one of those every now and then, is to discuss the news, issues, events, and developments in the always difficult and sometimes humorous practice of criminal justice. And we have a couple of things tonight that are a little bit odd, but that's the nature of the business. You have to have a sense of humor in the police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice. Our show is dedicated to those energetic and tireless professionals in all of those fields who protect us throughout the United States and indeed throughout the world. I was just having a conversation about injuries and deaths to police officers, and they're down the 2008 data, and that's excellent. I think less than 40 police officers were killed in the line of duty last year. And the thing about police work, it is dangerous. It is not the most dangerous field. There are five or six, seven others that top it in terms of both fatality and injury, but we certainly mourn the fact that any police officer would be killed in the line of duty. And the way that they're killed the most, unfortunately, is in traffic accidents. And the accidents are down. I'll comment on that later on as we look at one of our news stories. But traffic deaths are down last year also. What we try to do is look inside the practice of criminal justice and take a close-up look at its professionals. Most of the time, I think we're successful in doing that. And you're doing this, you're listening on the magic of Blog Talk Radio. It's certainly a leading-edge technology, and Alan Levy is the chief executive officer of BTR. He has his own show, and you can listen to that. And he's the genius behind this medium, and who knows how many thousands of shows there are now. I look on the BTR network each day as I sort of cross through across paths on the internet, and I see celebrity after celebrity, politician after politician, who aren't just guests on some of these shows. They're now hosting their own shows. You know, I hear people talking about perhaps something would happen relative to the fairness doctrine under the change of politics in Washington, and certainly people could slide right over to BTR. And they can listen not only on their computers and iPhones and that type of business, but you can call in to the phone number at our BTR, and you can listen to the whole show on your telephone. But this show started with one or two shows here two summers ago, and now it's up into thousands and thousands of shows, and each one of those are archived after they're done. So anybody can have a show. And on this network, it's now one of the top 100 websites in the world, with some of the most famous ones like YouTube, MySpace, Google, iTunes, etc. And that's pretty significant when you think about, I've lost count on how many websites there are. It used to be, you know, 10 years ago, 15, you could say there were 200,000 or something like that, but it's probably in the trillions, zillions now, who knows. But anybody can have their own show, so any person, any interest group, they can have their own show broadcast live and streaming audio over the internet worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners. And that unlimited number of listeners is a significant point. You know, you used to have little radio stations around colleges would have them things, you know, they were real low wattage. They would shoot out, you know, almost across the street from the school. And when you first started broadcasting on the internet, I tried some of it back in the 1990s. You could broadcast to, depending on the equipment you had, to 50 or 100 different different listeners. So now it's unlimited, and I don't know how many hours a week. Mike, we're going to have to check that, but I think people can have a show every day. I do know you can do that, and you can broadcast perhaps 15, 18, 20 hours a week. And I see universities have finally discovered this, and some of them are beginning to broadcast. The departments will have a show or something like that, and they'll help market their university degree programs. These shows are archived almost immediately after the show's over, and you can download those and keep them and play them in MP3 format, whatever. So what I'm always fond of saying is get your own show. Tonight we're going to do something a little bit different. I've really enjoyed hearing replays of this old radio show, and there's some real surprises in the details about this particular episode that started back in 1936 called The Green Hornet. And The Green Hornet was a publisher by daytime, but a very brilliant man and an accomplished martial artist by night, who masked himself and went out with his sidekick, his servant, as a matter of fact, Cato. And they would travel around in a car known as the Black Beauty, and they were vigilantes, and they would go out and protect the American public from crime and corruption and spying from during the Second World War, all sorts of things. And the Green Hornet had great significance in that, because of all hornets, the greens are supposed to be the worst. So I think you've never heard of, most people have never heard of the show. They're not old enough. I certainly wasn't old enough to listen to it myself in the 1930s. I wasn't here yet. But they were very successful. It turned into a TV show. And I'll make a little slip here for you. Van Williams, who was the star in the Green Hornet in the TV series, but the original guy on the radio show, became Captain Video. I don't know if anybody remembers the 15-minute television show in the 1950s. Done on one set, and that was actually the guy that did the Green Hornet. So I think you'll enjoy it if you haven't listened to one of the segments. It's about half hour long. One tonight is called Reservoir for Murder, and if you can go to archive.org, you can hear a whole series of the shows, probably at least a couple of dozen of them, and they're very interesting. They're pretty well written, and the advertisements are always interesting from those periods of time. Well, as a listener, if you're listening now, you don't need any advice, but you can call in by phone and talk to us, and that's 347-996-5983. That's 347-996-5983, and what we can do here is we can hold five calls at the same time, and we can all talk together about certain things. Those of you who listen regularly have heard us do that a number of times, for sure. Give us your buzz. You want to comment on some of the news tonight when we get the segment started, the Green Hornet segment, then probably we won't be taking any calls at that time. Well, Audrey, I really loved that blonde joke last week. I got comments about that. That was a knockout blonde joke. And tonight is another really good one. Your first-time listener, Audrey is a blonde. She was born in London, England, and she is a long-time collector of blonde jokes. And tonight she has one for us. So, Audrey, go ahead with your joke. What do you got?
Professor Haley, I do know that you like puzzles, and we have caught you working them here in the office. With that in mind, I believe you will enjoy tonight's blonde joke. Here it is. A blonde calls her boyfriend and says, "Please come over here and help me. I have a killer jigsaw puzzle, and I can't figure out how to get it started." He asks, "What is it supposed to be when it's finished?" The blonde says, "According to the picture on the box, it's a tiger." Her boyfriend decides to go over and help with the puzzle. She lets him in and shows him where she has the puzzle spread all over the table. He studies the pieces for a moment, then looks at the box, then turns to her and says, "First of all, no matter what we do, we're not going to be able to assemble these pieces into anything resembling a tiger." He takes her hand and says, "Second, I want you to relax. Let's have a nice cup of tea, and then," he sighed, "we'll put all these frosted flakes back in the box."
Yes, they would be difficult to make look like a tiger, for sure. Well, ladies and gentlemen, on a much more serious note, and as we do each week, we're in support of the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence, and they're interested, against firearms, excuse me, and they're interested in playing this public service announcement in order that gangbangers and street thugs and the criminals that are perhaps contemplating robbery or carjacking tonight will hear this advertisement and go turn in their guns. So we're very appreciative of their work, and we're proud to play their public service announcement.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Well, thank you very much, Coalition. And again, we hope that message falls upon the right ears. Every now and then somebody tells me that's not who they're directing their message toward, but it must be. It certainly couldn't be law-abiding citizens who have concealed carry licenses. They wouldn't want them to turn in their firearms. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, let's take a little bit a look at the news tonight. Some interesting things going on in the field, and I think one of those that I'd like to start off with here is one that you should find of interest, and this has to do with guns, of all things. We talk about guns once in a while on the show. I have a whole book on the subject of guns called With Liberty and Guns for All, a Primer on America's Firearms Debate. And Virginia has handed the governor, Kane, a couple of defeats. He came out in support of a couple of bills, and the most recent one, the Virginia Senate rejected a bill on Wednesday requiring background checks for private sales at gun shows. This is this deals with the so-called issue of the gun show loophole. And they were defeated in the Senate by a vote of 19 to 21, came a day after the Senate voted to repeal a law that Mr. Kane, a Democrat, had supported that prohibits anyone from carrying concealed weapons into a club or restaurant where alcohol is served. That's a point of contention in a lot of, that's not true. That's a point of contention in a number of states that have that restriction. For example, in the state of Ohio, if you've gone through all the necessary training and background check and classroom training to get a gun license, a CCW license, you're not permitted to take that firearm in any place that serves any amount of alcohol. In other words, you couldn't go to the big chain restaurants like Olive Garden or Applebee's, Ruby Tuesdays or something like that because they serve alcohol. I think a nice compromise in that was the state of Texas. I suppose sometimes it would be difficult to tell, but in the state of Texas, you're allowed to carry that firearm in an establishment as long as they don't make more than 50% of their profits from the sale of alcohol. In other words, what they're saying there in Texas terms is, you couldn't be carrying it into a honky-tonk on a regular basis, but you could go to one of these restaurants that happen to serve alcohol, beer, wine, et cetera. So that's interesting, and we're going to see what happens here. And they just had the Virginia Tech shooting here a couple of years ago, and on the gun show loophole issue, I think this guy picked up his gun from a private seller, if I'm not mistaken. I wouldn't swear to that. But anyway, people are going to get guns one way or the other. And they're saying that if you sell a gun at a gun show, if you buy one from a dealer at a gun show, you have to go through that instant background check. But a private person in most all states can set up a table, can walk around with a gun on their back and a little for sale sign and attract buyers that way. Gun show is a very interesting phenomenon if you've never been to one. And I would encourage you, if you ever have a chance or time, I'd send it to you if you like, if you let me know. But I did a big study of gun shows in Texas and Oklahoma, 7 different ones. And it's called the Market of Death, Market of Fun, Anatomy and Analysis of a Gun Show. And they're very interesting events if you've never been to one. Very interesting people there. I enjoyed every one that I went to. I think all told now I've only been to 8. I went to one here in Ohio, maybe 6 months ago, just because it was close, and I hadn't been to one in a long time, and I found it to be just a much smaller scale, but I found that Texas is big, right? I found it to be, the same type of people, decent people walking around looking for sporting weapons and protection weapons and that type of thing. So all these states are looking for other ways to attract money and revenue. So one of the things that's going on now here in the state of Ohio, we're trying to make our seatbelt law, which is a secondary enforcement type of law. Do people know what that means, Emily? I think you do, don't you? Yeah, it means the highway patrol or any law enforcement agency can't stop you. If they see you not wearing your seatbelt, you can't be stopped for that per se. But if they catch you in another traffic violation, cutting somebody off or speeding, running a stop sign, then when they stop you, they can also write you the ticket for not wearing your seatbelt. Well, what Governor Strickland wants to do here is to change that and make it so that it will be a primary enforcement violation. In other words, if the cop sees you, they can, in fact, write you the ticket right away, and they wouldn't have to find something else to stop you for. Now, what's interesting about that is the states that are contemplating this, a few others are doing the same thing, they're doing this to get revenue. I'm sure they're concerned about saving lives, but they're not really that worried about it. In fact, traffic deaths are down. I think they're down about 4,000. We always kill about 40,000 plus in the United States, but they're down about 4,000, about 10% last year. So we have fewer traffic deaths, and that's good. But I suppose with more seatbelts, they could save more lives. But seatbelts an interesting thing. I know people that are absolutely frustrated by having to wear them, and I know a couple that don't wear them at all. So they're counting on not being stopped for some type of violation. But in other states, you'd be required to do that. There's something going on here that's going to happen pretty quick, and I thought you might be interested in this tonight. There's a big study that's going to be released here very shortly, and it was done by the National Academy of Science. And this this was a study of forensic evidence in crime labs in the United States, and it's not going to be a flattering study. People have seen it. They say it's a sweeping critique of many forensic methods that the police and prosecutors rely on, including fingerprinting, firearms ID, analysis of bite marks, blood spatter, hair, and handwriting. I know a handwriting expert, and she does a lot of work in court, so I'd be interested. In fact, we should try to get Linda on the show some night. She'd be very interesting to talk to, but big consultant in the area of handwriting analysis. But what they're saying here in this report is that many times these analyses are handled by very poorly trained technicians who then exaggerate their accuracy and the methods in court. And it concludes that Congress should create a federal agency to guarantee the independence of the field, which has been dominated by law enforcement agencies, say forensic professional scholars and scientists. Well, I think one of the things they should pay tribute to is the law enforcement officers actually started the forensic analysis evidence in their agencies. Cops got put into the lab. They became ballistics experts or whatever. Some went on and got college degrees. Some were just, that old difference between being schooled and educated. Some of them weren't schooled, but they were very well educated, and oftentimes they did that on their own or in the context of learning with other police agencies, agents in their particular area. So we have many, many cases where, DNA has been successful in getting people off of death row. It's a very sad case in Texas. It was on public radio this morning. I won't have time to go through it all, but a man who was not guilty of a rape on the parking lot of a Texas college where he picked her up, took her out, raped her, she survived. Well, she identified him as mistaken identity. And what happened is that after about 7 years, when the statute of limitations ran out, this guy who did it confessed, and he couldn't get anybody to pay attention to it because this guy was already in prison doing time. And the guy in prison had severe asthma, and as it turns out, he finally dies in prison. He doesn't get out, so the public and the media have taken this up at least to get this man exonerated. And of course, the woman, she is so apologetic for the fact that this happened, but she says, the police said they had other evidence that put him in jail, when in fact it doesn't sound like they had much, their mom on the whole issue. But DNA helped to prove that this was not the guy. So it'll be interesting. I'm going to read that study very carefully when it does come out. I bet it's going to be a good volume. Does anybody care about Google tracking you on your cell phone? They started that, I think, today. They have a procedure now where you can turn on, download some software, and it sets up a GPS system on your phone, and you can give that to your friends, and they can always tell where you are. So 5 or 6 of you can turn on your phone and get a little spot map and see where you are. It's going to work in 27 countries, accordingly, by downloading the software onto your mobile. So privacy concerns are an issue here, and American Civil Liberties Union and some other places are wondering, what's going to happen with this particular system. It's called Google Latitude, if you're interested, but you could have somebody watching you tonight if you want to go download that software off of the Google website. What do you think about people having to submit DNA upon an arrest? We've got the state of Washington here is proposing a law where arrested suspects whose minor shoplifting would have to go through a DNA sample or give one before they're even charged with a crime. It's a controversial proposal in the legislature. And the American Civil Liberties Union again has said, look, this should be unconstitutional. These people haven't been convicted of anything, and they do bring up an important statistic that the public generally doesn't know. About 50% of all arrested defendants for felony crimes are released almost immediately. Now, a very small percentage of them are rearrested, but our proof level to take somebody into custody is below 50%. if you can look at it that way. It doesn't even tip the scale in terms of culpability. So we take in a lot of people and release a lot of people. And in Europe, they don't take you into custody till they have the same level of proof that we require for a conviction in court. So if they take fewer people in court, you're sort of considered guilty until you prove your innocence. Here we take in a lot of people, turn a lot loose, and you're innocent until proved guilty. Each part of the world thinks theirs is probably the best system, but that's what we live with. But the DNA thing is kind of interesting because it contains more than just a little identifiers that will nail you to a crime. It also kind of creates, it's a cache of your medical propensities and potential illnesses and all that business. And, you know, insurance companies, for example, would like to have DNA samples from you because then they could tell with some degree of certainty whether you're likely to get this type of disease or whatever, and then your insurance rates could either be raised or they would fail to insure you at all. So interesting to see what happens. And, you know, we also have DNA sweeps. I don't know if you know about those, but particularly in smaller communities, they'll narrow it down to a particular type of person, for example, by race, for example. And then they'll go out and say, well, they'll ask for DNA sweeps from our samples from like 100 different guys, like in a rape case, a serial rape case. So what you're almost required to do is give this DNA sample. If you don't, then people are going to assume, you know, that you're guilty and that sort of thing. So it's going to be interesting to see how that actually turns out. On that seatbelt law, I was kind of curious about, you know, we have all this business about seatbelts, but yet we allow motorcycles. I mean, does anybody wear a seatbelt on a motorcycle? I don't think they do. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. And I guess other states, they're looking for money for about any way they can do it. I thought this was an interesting thing. Somebody sent me this link last night, and I went to the CNN website, and I saw it. And I'm going to play this for you, and it's about illegal immigration. If you listen to the show very long, or have very long, you know that I have an interest in that, and I've done some studies and writing about the field of illegal immigration for quite some time, actually. I sort of struck onto this topic about 1999, and I've been with it about 10 years. And let me play this for you and see what you think of this particular segment. It's Lou Dobbs talking about the proposed immigration legislation that's in Congress right now.
Occasionally, candor in Washington actually coincides with accuracy. Some frank words, some choice words from House Minority Leader John Boehner. The congressman said the legislation, the immigration legislation currently working its way through our Congress is, quote, a piece of, expletive deleted. You have the idea. If you look at some of the provisions of this proposed new law, it's not hard to see why the minority leader is thinking and speaking the way he does. Among the worst provisions, one we just reported on in Bill Tucker's report, illegal aliens will be given legal status just one day after their application is filed, even if the background check isn't completed, and it could not be in nearly every instance. Other absurd provisions in this legislation, taxpayers unite. You'll be paying for the immigration attorneys to represent illegal aliens. How's that for a deal? You gotta love America. Supporters of a legislation called the new Z visa is temporary. What they don't want us to tell you is that the new visas can be renewed indefinitely. And gang members, illegal alien gang members, are eligible for amnesty. The Heritage Foundation estimating there are, by the way, at least 30,000 illegal alien gang members in 33 states. All the amnesties say they don't want to be a gang member anymore. Bingo. The federal government, with taxpayer money, your money, will be helping the Mexican government provide enough incentives, like a decent education and health care, for Mexican citizens to stay in their own country. And another provision of this legislation, illegal aliens don't have to pay those cumbersome, nasty taxes. this is, I think, what we would call a very, very generous amnesty program. A lot of folks would like to get a hold of this opportunity. And the proposed new Security and Prosperity Partnership, the North American Union, which would effectively erase borders among the United States, Mexico, and Canada, would be given top priority fast track for FTP. Border security, not first in this bill. We can't even find out what border security has to do with this legislation. It is all about amnesty. And the proposed 800-mile-plus fencing on our southern border could be slashed to just 200 miles. The Senate bill incorporating the so-called Dream Act that gives in-state tuition to illegal aliens, a benefit, of course, denied American citizens. Illegal aliens will, under the terms of this legislation, also be able to cut in front of everyone who've been waiting for years in their own countries for admission to the United States legally. Suckers. And another outrageous provision this bill, I've highlighted in the Heritage Foundation, released today its own list of the worst provisions. Get ready, because among them, amnesty for illegal aliens who were ordered deported. That was unfortunate. Heritage says our immigration courts could be effectively shut down with this legislation, as judges must close any immigration proceeding and allow illegal aliens to apply for amnesty. Senator Jeff.
Can you absolutely believe it? I mean, I don't know how. I mean, people have contacted Congress members, and I just do not understand. You're talking about something here that's costing us hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, and no one seems to care. So anyway, we'll take up illegal immigration at another time, another day. And tonight we're going to focus on the Green Hornet, and we hope you enjoy this show. And again, this was one that started way back in 1936, and this was a vigilante crime fighter. He was a successful genius type of publisher during the day, but at night he and his sidekick were out and keeping America safe by fighting crime. Here we go, the Green Hornet, and the name of our episode is The Reservoir for Murder.
The Green Hornet. The biggest of all game, public enemies who try to destroy our America. With his faithful valet Cato, Britt Reed, daring young publisher, matches wits with the underworld, risking his life that criminals and racketeers within the law may feel its weight by the sting of the Green Hornet. Ride with Britt Reed as he races toward another thrilling adventure in the story, Reservoir for Murder. The Green Hornet strikes again. Of the new city reservoir. As he walked across the cluttered ground toward the concrete abutments, he noticed that the men seemed to be especially busy with one section of the retaining wall.
Looks like something's cooking over there, and it ain't good.
Hey, buddy.
Well, you better not go any further, mister. That's
it. Okay. I'm a reporter from the Daily Sentinel. Here's my press card.
Sure, only
forget it. My insurance company says I can take all the risks I want and they'll pay off.
So why should I worry? Where's the phone around here?
The only ones in the construction shop.
Never mind, buddy. You warned me. You did your duty.
Hey, wait.
I am time. Reporters wait for no man. I'm climbing that scaffold. I want to see this with my own eyes. They built this reservoir with knitting needles instead of T-squares. The Sentinel's going to hear about it.
Hey, what's happening to that scaffold?
The whole section's going to cave in. Did you see that? Did I see it? Holy mackerel, it's a piece of concrete as big as a truck. Gangway, I got to get that pole.
Sentinel Publisher's office.
Casey, this is Lowry. Where's the boss?
What's the matter, Lowry? You sound exhausted.
Give me the boss. It's coming down around my ears.
Casey, is that Lowry?
Yes, it's Lowry, Mr. Reed.
All right. Hello. Hello, Larry.
Boss, that's it with the McCoy. One section is caving in.
The reservoir going? This case got Gunnigan.
Yes, sir.
Gunnigan.
Here he is.
Gunnigan, Reed talking. I've got Lowry on the phone. Construction wreck at the reservoir. I have a rewrite man caught in. You got it?
Got it.
Okay, Lowry, you give it to the rewrite man.
Okay, boss.
Can you see what's going on?
Sure, I have a ringside seat. I'm at the construction shack. I can see from the window. Okay, Mr. Reed.
All set, Lowry. The rewrite man's listening. Go ahead. Concrete walls. They've been showing up one section because it had a crack in it, but it isn't a crack anymore. Hold it. There goes another chunk. You hear that? Man, it's a lucky thing there wasn't any water in that reservoir yet. Half the people in Naples Valley be getting their feet wet up to their ears. The rest of the concrete seems to be okay, but that one section... Yeah? They're pulling the men away from it. Yes, it's going to change. They're running like this. Looks like it's going to be more than 1 month before the governor dedicates the Naples Valley Reservoir project after all. There'll be an investigation. Hold it. Here comes the big one. 150 tons of concrete. Going, going,
down as men worked to clear away the debris. And slipping quietly and unnoticed among the working men was Ed Lowry. He stayed out of the lighted areas as much as possible, but his sharp eyes saw everything there was to see.
Maybe I can dig up an angle on this. Concrete walls just don't fall down and go boom without a reason. The concrete's solid enough. Certainly feels that way on my feet. Hey, what's this? One of the sealed supports that was buried in the... Funny, it's got a sharp edge. Lowry, my friend, maybe you're onto something here. Now, where did I put those matches? Let's have a look at the edge of this girder. Come on, light. Come. Well, that's only on the front page. No wonder that concrete wall caved in. Holy mackerel, this girder is... Hey, let go of me. What are you doing? What are you doing? It's just...
Very amusing. Where's the boss?
Oh, I knew you'd try to fight somebody bigger than you someday. Or was it a whole gang?
Not Casey. It was one guy with a 10-ton blackjack in his fist.
Well, so that's why you didn't come back to the office last night or phone in. Fighting, huh?
Holy mackerel, what kind of a reception is this? So help me, boss. I got this while I was on the job.
You did?
Sure. I was checking over that reservoir after dark. And just when I find something good, blam, some monkey jumps me and sends me to dreamland. Didn't wake up till this morning.
Well, you found something good. What do you mean?
What I said, boss. I found enough to prove that crash was no accident.
Good
crash. No accident? No, sir. Not when the steel supports that are supposed to be embedded in that concrete are sort halfway through.
What?
Yes.
Gosh, Mr. Reed, and the whole state is blaming Jeff Thorndyke, saying that he's responsible.
Not if that concrete was deliberately weak.
It was, boss.
Lowry, you're going back there. Miss Case, get a photographer to go back with Lowry and take pictures of that damage. Call the police.
Whoa, boss.
What?
No dice. You'd be wasting your time.
Don't be silly, Lowry. Why, it would make a front-page story that would scoop the town.
Hold on, Miss Case, just a moment. Go on, Lowry. We'd be wasting our time. Why?
Because the steel girders aren't there anymore.
Go on.
When I woke up, I started to look again. Boy, somebody cleared those girders out of there like Lewis took Bear. What good is a story without proof?
We'll see you now, gentlemen.
This way, please.
Okay, Thorndyke, keep your chin up. I'm glad you're here, Reed. It's good to have someone backing me up. Bender just got the X out for me. Can't say I blame him.
Caving wasn't your fault, Thorndyke.
Yes, I know the sense.
It was, but someday we'll prove it.
It does very much if you can prove that, Reed.
Hello, Senator.
Hello. You may go, Miss Bradley.
Yes, sir.
Well, Thorndyke, as engineer in charge of that construction job, you've managed to put me in the soup. There's only one way I can satisfy the public. You come right to the point. Did you bring along your resignation?
I can't understand what went wrong.
I'm not interested in alibis. I'm interested in results. You didn't get them.
I understand. Here's my resignation.
Now, just a minute.
Yes?
The rat deserts the sinking ship.
Your bird's aimed at me, Reed.
It is?
I hit this department. I'm responsible for what happens.
You're also responsible for the men under you. Yet you're making Thorndyke the ghost.
I'm putting the blame where it belongs.
If you read the Sentinel, there might be some doubt that what happened was Thorndyke's fault.
Poppycock. The story cooked up to make circulation. You know, Jim...
Not from the Sentinel, sir.
There's no proof. Your reporter made that story up, and you believe him.
I believed him, yes. But he didn't make it up. I know my reporter. And get this, Shevlin. The public has faith in the Sentinel, too.
There's no time for...
Which is just what I said. You're yapping about the interest of the public. Well, get this, Shuffle. The Sentinel has a circulation that's almost as big as all the others combined. And this morning, after our story, our switchboard was flooded with phone calls.
Phone calls about what?
About the cave-in at the new reservoir. Shufflin, if you're interested in public opinion, you might be interested to know that the public does believe that story in the Sentinel. At least enough so that they don't blame Thorndyke.
True.
If you want a record of their names and address...
No, no, I don't doubt you. Thorndyke, this puts a different complexion on things.
Shevlin is always sensitive to public opinion, aren't you, Shevlin?
Yes, Senator, yes. Do you mean my resignation?
Yes, I'm not accepting it, Thorndyke. There, in the wastebasket.
I don't know what to say.
Never mind. Just go ahead and make sure the job is finished. And finished right.
It'll be done right. Still puzzled about
what
I
guess. Let's go. Can't you see the senator wants to be alone, to eat his own words? Goodbye, Shevlin. Next time, don't be too anxious to throw out a good word.
Goodbye, Senator. It'll be done right. I'll make sure it's done right.
Goodbye. Go ahead and finish that job. When it's done, I'll make absolutely sure Thorndyke loses his job. I'll make it positive.
Means the job is done, men. Thanks for your work. The Maple Valley Reservoir is a project you can be proud of.
Senator Shepard, will you close the water pipes? It'll take about a week to get the water high enough in the reservoir to start using it.
That's the way the weather is, Thorndike. It's raining up in the mountains until the reservoir fails. I just press this button?
Yes. For letting me finish this job.
Yes. Well, here comes some rain. You'll excuse me. I'll get to my car.
Senator Shepard.
Yes, what is it?
Everything's set. This rain ought to speed it up, too.
Look around.
Oh, there's nobody to hear. Just a couple of more days and it'll be Thorndike's finish.
He's riding high.
It'll be his finish.
It better be.
Side of the senator's car. Who are you?
Excuse, please. I'm very sorry. Mr. Britt, I come back to apartment at once. I tell you what I hear.
You don't know their plan?
No, sir.
This rain will fill up that reservoir pretty fast.
That is true. Rain continues. I think...
Hey, we've got to find out. Check the gas weapon in the Hornet mask.
It's raining very hard, Mr.
That doesn't matter. Rain or no rain, the Green Hornet's going out on the black duty.
A few minutes later, Britt Reed and his Filipino valet, Cato, stepped through a secret panel in Britt Reed's bedroom, then along a narrow passage built within the wall itself. Down narrow, creaking stairs that led around a corner and connected directly with another building on a little-used, dead-end side street. Seen from the street, this building looked deserted, empty like all the others. No one could guess that within its bleak walls stood the supercharged Black Beauty, streamlined car of the Green Hornet.
Go ahead, Cato. We're going to find this man, Bender. We'll get the answer.
Cato flipped on the headlights. A photoelectric cell registered the beam, started a small electric motor. Silently, a huge section of apparently solid wall swiveled upward. The sleek black car rolled into the street, turned and headed north toward Maple Valley. And behind it, the wall once more dropped into place.
You don't want this Maple Valley Reservoir job, Bender?
You'll never know, Joe. Good night.
Pretty wet out.
Yeah, and it'll be a lot wetter, too.
A lot wetter.
Just a minute, Bender.
Hey, what's the idea of bumping into a guy this way? Dark enough to black out it?
This is a gun in your ribs.
Hey, what is this, a stick-up? Who are you? That man with a Green Hornet.
Come with me, Bender.
What do you want?
Come with me. You're going to answer some questions.
Hotter upstate than it is here in the city, Senator.
Yes, Miss Darcy. I won't need you anymore tonight, you know.
Yes, sir.
Hey, what's the matter with Bender? He's supposed to call me on my private phone. The water should be pouring into that reservoir. I want to know. I tried to get him myself. He isn't home. Private phone, that's it. Hello, is this you, Bender?
Hello, Shevlin.
Who is this?
You were expecting a call from Bender, weren't you?
Bender, what? This number is private. You're making a mistake.
Bender's right here. It's no mistake. I know all about it, Shevlin.
About what?
The Maple Valley Reservoir. I want $10,000.
Who are you?
This is the Green Hornet.
The Green Hornet?
$10,000, your scheme blows up right in your face.
You can't bluff me.
Not a bluff. Remember, I've got Bender here. It wouldn't be hard to get him to talk. Now make up your mind, Shevlin. $10,000,
all right.
I have it.
All right. At least I'm willing to talk to you about it.
Nice, and your apple cart may not be tipped over, huh? I'll meet you in a valley about a mile below the reservoir where Route 22 and Highway 16 split.
I know where.
Tomorrow night at 11. Be there, Shevlin. Don't forget.
phone call here.
All set. Tomorrow night at 11. Where is Bendy?
You give him gas from gun, Mr. Britt. He in his car, unconscious. What do we do between now and tomorrow night, please?
You take care of Bendy?
Oh, I keep him unconscious till then, yes.
Good. I'll take the Black Beauty and head back to town. I want to be at the Sentinel tomorrow. I'll meet you at 11 in the evening.
Oh, where is meeting?
The junction of Route 22 and State Highway 16 in the valley here, Cato. And take care of Bendy.
Casey?
5:30.
Will you come along, Mr. Thorndyke, to Mr. Reed's office?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Nice guy, Thorndyke. I like him.
I wonder if he'll get trouble himself.
Yeah, I hope so. Somebody ought to.
Yeah.
Still
running. All day and since yesterday.
This rain has me a little worried, Reed. Maple Valley Reservoir is
obviously foolish, Thorndyke. You have men up there, haven't you?
Well, yes, but if something unforeseen
occurs. Oh, forget it.
Say, Lowry.
What is, boss?
I've got to head for home. I have an appointment tonight. Oh, will you and Miss Case keep Mr. Thorndyke from getting the jitters? Now that his work's done, he has plenty of time for worrying, so keep him occupied. Now, you might show him around the Sentinel. Perhaps he's never seen a great newspaper at work.
Well, Mr. Thorndyke, you've seen everything.
Listen to that thunder. Still raining.
Give up, Casey. The guy's hopeless. Here it is, 10:30 at night. Outside of eating dinner, we've been giving him a conductor tour of the Sentinel, and all he thinks about is the weather. I tell you, Casey, that...
Oh, Mr. Thorndyke, I've been calling you from Senator Shevlin's office all evening. I couldn't get you, so I finally came over.
Miss Darcy, what's the matter?
I don't know exactly. A phone call came from the Senator. It wasn't on his private line, so I took it. Mr. Thorndyke, it was a man reminding the Senator to be at the junction of Route 22 and Highway 60 at 11 tonight.
The junction... In the valley?
Yes, and to make $10,000. But the Senator was gone already. I couldn't tell him.
Oh, sister, calm down. You're all excited.
Why shouldn't I be? The man who called was a green horse. The horse?
Holy mackerel, this is a case for the police.
The police?
Sure, hold on the fort, Casey, and tell Gunnigan to get set for a page one scoop. 11 o'clock, huh? We might not make it by 11, but we'll be there soon after. Come on, Thorndyke.
Shovelin, I got the money and
the car coming.
The car. That would be police. Get out of here. Get out.
I will, Shovelin, but first.
No, no, don't you be doing
it, Patrick.
Is it for you, Bunder, or just use my fist?
Miss Cato, don't keep to the police or I. Remind me to send this $10,000 to the Red Cross, will you? Let's get to the Black Beauty.
What, Mr. Britt? I don't understand.
I don't understand what, Cato?
Well, even when police get here, even when they find those two, what good is that? It's not possible they prove they are criminals.
Don't worry about that, Cato.
But I do worry. How police know unless Senator or Senator talks? They not talk.
I said don't worry. Let's go, Cato.
Shovelin's car.
What's the
impact? Now, easy, it's dark. Let me in there first. How about the light, Flannery? Yeah, Lowry. Hey, the Senator's out cold. I guess the heart had beat us to the punch.
That's right. He clipped
Bender. What are you doing here?
Hello, Mr. Thorndyke.
Thing's doing nothing.
Oh, nothing. We come all the way out here into the valley to catch the Green Hornet, and what happened?
Nothing.
The Hornet was here, mister. He was here.
Are we in the valley?
Yeah.
Right below the Maple Valley Reservoir?
Of course, Bender.
How long's it been raining?
Since yesterday, coming down in buckets.
What's the matter with you, Bender? Oh, poor fellow must be out of his head.
Since yesterday. We'll be drowned. That Carroll Creek wall is in a cave any minute. Now, let me out of here.
Yes.
No, it's true, I tell you. If we stay here, we'll be drowned. Mr. Thorndike, we'll drown. Now, listen, you've got to believe me. I was being paid by seven. I saw them steal support.
You what?
Yeah. I saw it all of them. Then I poured the cement in so it wouldn't be seen. That dam won't hold, I tell you.
You'll get jail for this, mister, and Shevlin.
Who cares about jail? Well, I'll drown, I tell you. Now, let me out.
Good Lord, Lowry, he knows what he's talking about. We've got to get to the dam. We've got to open the emergency sluices and drain the water off. If we're too late, the whole wall will go. The valley will be flooded. People will die in their sleep. Women and children in the town. We've got to get there at once.
Yeah, Mr. Thorndike. I've been trying to get loose for 10 minutes. Can you imagine some guy comes busting here wearing a mask? I tried to stop him, but he opened all the emergency
ones. Did you say he opened the sluices?
Yeah. The water's dropped 2 feet already.
Davis, that man saved the valley. The concrete wall would have caved any minute.
He was wearing a mask. And that note, he left that note on the table.
Oh, it says in here. I've got it.
Thorndike, it says, I may be a crook, but I don't go in for mass murder. It isn't signed, but it doesn't have to be.
Lowry, listen. It was the Green Hornet.
Dramas created by George W. Trendle are a copyrighted feature of The Green Hornet, Incorporated. All characters, names, places, and incidents used are fictitious.
As if you couldn't tell they were fictional, right? Before we close, a couple of interesting facts about this particular show. The great CBS newsman, who's now passed, Mike Wallace, was one of the original commentators on the show, of the announcers for the show, and that's interesting. And the Green Hornet even crossed paths with our own J. Edgar Hoover from the FBI. They used to advertise in the beginning of the show. Let me give you the exact words. Something like. The Green Hornet hunts the biggest of all game, public enemies that even the G-men cannot reach. And he was referring to FBI agents, and J. Edgar Hoover got objected to this implication. And so they actually began to change it, and they said they changed it to public enemies who destroy our America. So J. Edgar Hoover was a bit offended by the fact that the Green Hornet was purporting to be more effective than they were in fighting public enemies. I thought that was a real hoot, actually. J. Edgar Hoover had some interesting insights on the world, for sure. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's all for our show tonight. Tune in next week, look at the show billing, and see what we have coming up, and I'm sure that we'll be seeing each other again.
We'll meet again. Don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like dark cloud far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know? Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. We meet again, don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again someday.